Greetings, friends. My name is Jessa McLean, and I'm here to provide you with some blueprints of disruption. This weekly podcast is dedicated to amplifying the work of activists, examining power structures, and sharing the success stories from the grassroots. Through these discussions, we hope to provide folks with the tools and the inspiration they need to start to dismantle capitalism, decolonize our spaces, and bring about the political revolution that we know we need.
And we're back. After pausing for a couple of weeks, the most amazing interview opened up, one with a previous guest who is currently doing everything she can to stop the genocide in Gaza. Will we all be able to look back and say as much? As I record this, dozens of activists kidnapped by Israeli forces, civilians from all over the globe, are arriving in Greece and other parts of Europe after being deported by the Zionist occupation. They had been part of another wave of ships, part of the Freedom Flotilla, that seeks to break the siege on Gaza. These were not the first ships, nor will they be the last. When we spoke with Dr. Yipeng Ji while he was on board the Handala, we talked about the history of activists using this method to draw attention to and break the naval blockade, the illegal blockade, on what is now a starving population of mostly children. The most recent large flotilla of humanitarian aid, over 40 ships, were first tormented by the IOF and then seized, all in international waters. As some of these activists are arriving home, we are also hearing of their inhumane treatment in Israeli prisons, something Palestinians have been telling us about for generations now. But none of that has stopped people from continuing to board ships still bound for Gaza, our next guest included. Meskwasin is with us again, this time from The Conscience. She'll introduce herself in a moment. Now, despite our best efforts, the sound quality is what you'd expect from aboard a busy ship in the middle of the Mediterranean. Please stick with it, though. She is a force that needs to be heard. We were able to speak with her just before her drone watch shift and very much appreciate her time. We've also linked our previous interview with Meskwasin, Blockades and Bail Conditions. You can find that in the show notes. Before we get into it, do us a favor though, will ya? Share this episode with a friend. Give the show a little boost. I also want to give a big thank you to the folks who reached out during my little hiatus. There are good people out there. And I am grateful I found some of them through this little podcast. Keep taking care of each other out there. Now here's Meskwasin. So, okay, let's just give us the bare facts. Where are you right now? What are you doing?
So we have just sailed south past Crete. I am with the Freedom Flotilla to break the siege on Gaza, currently aboard the Conscious. And we are headed towards Gaza to break the siege.
Who else is on the boat with you there?
Yep, so we are a crew of medics and journalists. Currently, there is a target on the backs of journalists in Gaza. There's a complete media blackout, and there's also assassinations on the next day. Part of the genocide that's currently happening in Gaza.
How long have you been a sail?
So we left September 30th, but I've actually been abroad for quite some time. I had left so-called Canada Turtle Island on September 12th. Lots of waves happening here in the boat. I was originally in Ajaccio, Corsica, which is an island south of France. I was with Dr. Suzanne Shush, and we were going to sail to Haiti, unfortunately, due to mechanical issues. We were not able to sail. And then I went to Catania, which is a place in Sicily. I did some training there, then headed up to Otranto, which is on the mainland of Italy. And that's the port that we left out of. So it was quite a journey to even just get to this vessel. I did not expect to be in Europe for so long. It was quite hot, but you know, it was an interesting it's been an interesting one.
It makes the flotilla all that more impressive when you understand the routes everyone had to take to get there. But it just demonstrates, you know, folks' determination. I saw you talking to Rachel Smald right before this. She talked about, you know, instilling the idea of pushing for more risk, perhaps, and sacrifice, and keeping that kind of mentality. Do you want to hit on that a little bit, expand on your mission there, beyond, you know, Blake exposing the blockade and breaking the siege?
Yeah, you know, it's actually quite ridiculous that civilians are having to take this action. We're 2 years into this genocide, and, you know, Palestine has been occupied since 1948, and there's been several genocides since then. But, you know, it goes to show that it can be done. There are vessels that have reached the blockade. And this has been a movement that's been happening for almost 20 years. There's people on this vessel that have sailed many times before. There's people that are here that were on Kandala. That were imprisoned and went on hunger strike for almost a week. And we're talking about, you know, one of my comrades here is in her 70s. She was on the vessel again. And it just shows the determination that some people have in the face of Israel's barbarity. And people are willing to put their lives and their bodies on the line to take action. And this is what it takes, because we can't rely on our government to, you know, do what's right and stand in humanity. We've just been gaslit by the Canadian government so hard for the past 2 years. And it's just, you know, even recognizing Palestine as a state, but not placing sanctions on Israel, not, you know, implementing a two-way arms embargo. It's just meaningless. And, you know, as an Indigenous woman, you know, we have the Truth and Reconciliation Commission and the 94 Calls to Action. You know, there we have our missing and murdered Indigenous women and the calls to action there. None of those have been implemented. We're seeing our rights at home as Indigenous people being trampled on. And so it just comes as no surprise to me, really. But this is what it takes. And I think we're having to escalate. People have been doing this for a long time.
I mean, it is what it takes. We always say we keep us safe, and that doesn't just apply to in the streets. It's, you know, globally, it seems our responsibility as well. There's almost comfort in that, though, in letting people kind of let that sink in, that it takes community, it takes citizens, because even when we do rely on states, maybe, you know, we see some of the other European states launch ships. But that didn't stop them from being intercepted by the Israeli forces there. 42 ships just were intercepted, the activists kidnapped, detained. We don't know the status of all of them, but that's, you know, we're getting details here and there. Are you part of a larger group, or is it just the conscience now that's a sail?
So we just met up with the Thousand Mandolines. It's unsure if we're going to be continuing to sail with them. Our vessel is quite larger. You can see some of these sailboats. It's incredible how far they've come and the weather that they've had to endure. So we're a little bit faster. So there's technical stuff to consider. So it's not sure if we're going to be able to stay with them. But, you know, we got to meet up with them today. That was pretty incredible. And they left out of Catania.
When I talked to Yiping G about the mission there, it was a single ship. Well, it wasn't just a single ship, but the focus was on the Handala at the time, and there were some observer ships. But he spoke of creating wave after wave, you know, knowingly that the chances of reaching the shores of Gaza were slight. That didn't deter anybody. And now it seems there is quite literally wave after wave. Is that your expectation, that ships will just continue sailing until the job is done?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, it's been 20 years, so this movement happening. You know, I think as we approach the winter months, it'll be harder and harder for people to do that. We would see civilian vessels leave off the coast of Turkey, I don't believe are going all the way to Gaza. But, you know, people are doing everything that they can, and even if you can't get there on, you know, vessels and we can't sail there, we need to continue to take action in the streets, right? So we've just seen an uprising all over the world, people in solidarity with Palestine, shutting down ports, blockades, all forms of transportation and commerce, you know, that is completely being disrupted. And so that's how we continue to fight as we approach the winter months. But I assume that as soon as people can, and people are fighting, you know, more flotillas as we speak, I'm sure.
How did you decide to get on the flotilla? Were you invited, or did you, you know, were you determined to find a way to sail? And because, like, we all feel like I want to do more, and you certainly found a way to try to do more.
So yeah, I've been organizing a long time. I didn't just start organizing yesterday. I didn't start organizing October 7th, and I have a big community of people and comrades that I trust. And it was actually my colleague, Dr. Susan, who called me on a Sunday and was like, "Hey, do you want to get on this flotilla with me?" And I was like, "Yeah, let's go." I didn't even think twice. It was just, you know, an immediate yes. And we left on a Tuesday, so I had 2 days to prepare. But I didn't think twice about it, and unfortunately, she wasn't able to sail with me on the Conscience, but she's here with me in my heart. And, you know, we do a lot of harm reduction work back together at home. We do frontline work back together at home, and so I felt confident going in with her, and, you know, just, she does incredible work. And so it was actually through her invitation that I ended up on this vessel, and the good folks of Canada Boat to Gaza saw the importance of the First Nation being here and supporting me, so I'm really grateful for that.
I've been following you on IG, right, or wherever you come across my feed, and I've noticed you're carrying some flags with you in your journey, and you left on a very significant date. Let's spend a little bit of space here tying Indigenous resistance movements, you know, between Turtle Island and Palestine.
Yeah. So people have been seeing me carry this warrior flag around. It was actually a gift from East Bay to the Wet'suwet'en Land Defender. And she had actually brought that flag to Standing Rock. So that's where that started. And then, of course, there was Coyote Camp. I didn't even checkpoint. And so that flag was waving there. And now it's here with me on the way to Gaza. And, you know, Indigenous resistance is worldwide. It's not just on Turtle Island. You might have seen some of the images of the young Palestinian girl waving a warrior flag in Somalia, in Palestine. And so it's just, to me, it's a symbol of strength, resilience, and honoring the teachings of our ancestors and those true warrior teachings, which is to take care of the young and the old and consider the next seven generations, the generations that came before us, right? And so just practicing that. And, you know, it was through Eve giving us that flag that I brought that flag here. Originally, my comrade Asa Henson, who's an Inuit from Greenland, was supposed to join me, so she left me her Greenland flag, so I've been flying that too. And my partner, who's an Anishinaabe, is a warrior, and he had his Anishinaabe flag flying up Land Back Lane for a few years, so I've got that with me too. So there's just a lot of good medicine there that I've got with me.
Beyond how long it took you and how many stops you made, what has been the biggest surprise of this journey to the Freedom Flotilla?
For me, I was really surprised at that one vessel, Mykonos. that I'm blown away that men and their crew were able to pass the blockade. I don't know how. I don't know what they did. But I'm like, wow, I really hope that we have a chance to do something similar. There was a blockade of 20 IOF warships. Even one, a Zodiac is intimidating. They're facing water cannons, skunk water, intimidation. These guys are armed. This is no joke. These Israeli occupation forces here are not a joke. So when I saw that, I was like, it's possible, it can happen, and we could make it to Gaza. And to me, it felt real. And then also just seeing Palestinian fishermen being able to fish without being shot at, to me is I cried tears of joy. That made it worthwhile for me. Just even being with that, just for them to fish for one day on their lands and their waters, which they have every right to do. And of course, being First Nations fishing is a huge part of our life, our way of life. And, actually, before I just came to be in France, at the same time we're in Gippsland territory in salmon season, and I just, having that in the back of my mind and our inherent rights as Indigenous people to be able to practice these things is so, so important. So just all of these experiences just coming together and really reflecting on that and what it means to steward the land and take care of the land.
It'll be interesting for me to hear from you after all of this, just as a reflection on the experience. But you must understand that a lot of folks are watching you and getting, feels and getting inspired and are grateful. What other kind of impact are you hoping to make on, your comrades back in so-called in Toronto?
I hope people shut it down. I hope people shut it down. I'm like, please do something. And that's my greatest hope. And I hope that people who aren't active start becoming active. I have a friend who, messaged me and was like, I was really tired today, but I saw what you're doing. And there was a, of course, white nationalist Nazi rally that happened in Christy Pitch there. He was like, I'm going to show up and tell the fascists to fuck off, and he did. And I was like, hell yeah. And this is somebody who doesn't normally go to actions too often. And it was just a friend of mine that, was like, I'm going to get up and do something today. And so just little things like that, messages like that mean a lot. People who I know who might not be, politically aware or even understand what's happening in Palestine are starting to pay attention now. And so just creating that awareness, creating that spark in other people has meant a lot. I hope that it can continue and show itself in a lot of different ways.
How will it feel if you see the shores of Gaza?
I'm going to cry. Probably collapse from exhaustion. It's obviously, there's people in Palestine that are watching us and it's giving them hope. But they've given us more than we could ever give to them. And I know that over the 2 years, people that I've spoken to in Gaza, people that I've tried to support and, traditionally and whatnot, I'm just thinking of those people and being able to see. I did that all that I could and really standing in my truth and really showing up in the biggest way that I can. So it's going to feel, I don't know. I'm going to have a lot of feelings. And I'm pissed off, in a lot of ways too, because that we've had to do this, and this is what it's taken, and you know, people have reached out to me and said, we're worried for you. And some of those people haven't said a word about Palestine. And it's like, why does my life hold more value than the life of a Palestinian? And the answer is racism. The answer is xenophobia. The answer is othering. You know, people know that there's genocide happening. They just don't care, or they're blinded by money, or it just seems like it's a world away. It's not. It impacts us. It impacts our democracy. You've seen how Palestinian solidarity protests have created bubble zone protest zones, and I know that you've spoken about that and talked to people about that, and it's like, man, this is impacting your own democracy, and it's like, how come, I'm pissed off because it's like, how come we have to do this to make people care? Like, where's the humanity in this world? So, I just have like a whole range of emotions, and our anger is sacred. Our anger is sacred, and so we have to hold on to that.
Yeah, I saw someone tweet or just, you know, express that they never thought they'd spend like the last 2 years losing respect for a huge amount of people in their inaction. And sometimes that's one of the hardest parts to grapple with. So when we see folks like you and the other, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people who have signed up for the Freedom Flotilla have gone or who are waiting to go, you know, it reminds us that not as a whole, we haven't lost our humanity. The flotilla is just so demonstrative of what we want everything to be. And I know it sucks so bad that our comrades are on ships, like risking their lives, and you're going out there and making these sacrifices. But like I said again, like that's what it's going to take anyway, right? Like the UN won't save them. And if they do, what will that mean anyway, right? It'll mean more levels of colonization, and it's astonishing. It is astonishing that we're at this point. And I was watching you on live right before this and talking how we've been locked out of government, right? And the folks you were talking about to get to this point, right? We pleaded with them. We asked for this, that, and the other thing. They gave us recognizing the state of Palestine, and they're hoping we go away. And using other tools to scare us to go away. But no, the movement is relentless. What do you hope the flotilla gives the movement as a whole? A little bit of boost?
Yeah. I was kind of blown away by people celebrating the thought that the Italian and Spanish vessels had joined the Samud. And it was kind of like, from the beginning, I had really mixed feelings about that, you know, because one, it demonstrated that these countries could have been sending humanitarian aid the whole time. The other was, you know, just a complete sabotage of their mission, you know, to try and convince them to hand over their aid to what? Even to the Israelis, right? And even Maloney making that comment that the flotilla would somehow damage or, you know, somehow impact the peace talks that Trump is having with Israel. And it's just complete nonsense and utter bullshit. I don't understand how people don't see through it. And it's like, you know, even Canada talking about sending troops over for a peace mission, we know what that looks like. We saw what happened in Iraq and Afghanistan. It's no secret to us, and we shouldn't think that this is going to be any different. And so the people of Palestine have their own sovereignty, their own agency, and they deserve their whole independence from the river to the sea, right? And it doesn't mean a two-state solution. And that's what this is about.
Yeah, I mean, not a lot of liberals listen to this show, so everyone else is just like, you know, nodding along with you, Musquassam, for sure. Like, no one, I think, is, at least that's listening here, is falling for that kind of shit. But, you know, we are very hungry for any kind of kernel of hope. So I do understand when, you know, someone declares they're sending warships to escort the flotilla. It's that glimmer, that state recognition to maybe the uneducated is like, ooh, something. But it's obviously sometimes far more dangerous. And again, like, yeah, it's just, there's no sense in waiting for the state. All this time we've been petitioning them and calling them. And I heard you say that is important, and it is, but we're really talking to each other, right? We need each other to rise up. We don't need our politicians to do the right thing, because that's just piecemeal shit, right? As if it does, if this, all this does anything, it's build a worldwide movement that's so much more determined and educated and experienced. And I feel it'll lead us somewhere, you know, even beyond a free Palestine. I do.
I've definitely seen a shift. I mean, like, in the past, you know, month when I've been traveling around the EU, you know, just the uprising that's happening around the world, you know, it gives me hope. And even if people, like I said, aren't on a flotilla, they're shutting down those ports and they're shutting down those rail systems, and in every way that they can, we're seeing unions step up that they never have before. And hopefully, you know, North Americans can take, you know, some inspiration from that as well. But yeah, it does give me hope, I think I just from my standpoint here, you know, just looking at everything happening and just being so immersed in this genocide over this past month has just really kind of given me given my head a shake a little bit.
I bet. That's an understatement. Yeah. I appreciate you taking the time to come on and let us know how you're doing and what you're doing and why you're doing it, even though, you know, we understand. It seems silly to say stay safe out there, but I still want you to stay safe out there. We need you, comrade, but I understand what you're doing and I applaud you for it. And even then, that's, again, another major understatement. So yeah, do stay safe, sister, and get some rest when you can.
I will. Thank you so much, Jessa. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and just keep doing the good work. Thank you so much.
You too, sister.
Okay, bye for now. Bye for now. Take care.
That is a wrap on another episode of Blueprints of Disruption. Thank you for joining us. Also, a very big thank you to the producer of our show, Santiago Halu Quintero. Blueprints of Disruption is an independent production operated cooperatively. You can follow us on Twitter at BP of Disruption. If you'd like to help us continue disrupting the status quo, please share our content. And if you have the means, consider becoming a patron. Not only does our support come from the progressive community, so does our content. So reach out to us and let us know what or who we should be amplifying. So until next time, keep disrupting.